Cha-ching. That's the sound of Lowe's Labor Day savings. Get up to 45% off select major appliances and save up to an additional $100 on select laundry pairs. Plus, get 3 bags of Miracle-Gro 0.75 cubic foot garden soil for just $10. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Here we are, the Lindsay Clancy verdict. We may actually get it within the hour officially, and we will go to that if they get back into the courtroom to deliver that verdict. Kevin Reddington here at the very last moment decided to appear to opt for what I would call the physical challenge, if you will, like Double Dare. We have some footage of him right now on the court steps. This is Kevin Reddington. He is partaking in the physical challenge at the moment, trying to get the document up to the courthouse steps as quickly as he possibly. He's on the hamster wheel right now. And there we go. He's got the document. Mark Summers is there cheering him on. And there he goes. He's got it to the courthouse. Look at that, Kevin Reddington. Hoop of fire for the complete. There we go.
Ring of fire. That's
ring of fire. It looks like he has succeeded in his Double Dare challenge there. I was surprised he opted for the physical challenge at the end. It's kind of what it feels like, though, quite honestly. It's like, I'll give you an hour, run to this other building and get this file. I mean, we're in 2026 and we operate, you know, like we're pre-fax machine in so many ways. And it seems it's almost a reflection of also how we understand mental health and how the state of Massachusetts has processed this case, how it's presented this case, almost as if it's in that same sort of era. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program with us this morning, as always. Do you feel the same? I mean, it does. It almost feels like, you know, maybe some things need a little updating here on how we handle things in such archaic fashion.
You know, yes and no. And I only say yes and no because, yes, it needs updating, Tony. But the thing that really struck me, I mean, watching him, again, you know, put the emotions, because I know we have a lot of divided people in the country on this one, but put the emotions of what you think about the case aside a second. When I watched him as the judge is about to call on the jury and declare a mistrial, I'm watching it live, like we all were, and he stands up on his last ditch effort to call for a stay, and watching him fight to the last breath, I had to look it up. I mean, I got it on my AI right here, what the hell he was doing.
Yeah.
I mean, I get misty thinking about it, and not because of the case, although that's important, mostly important because of the mental health challenges of women and everything. But when you see a human being fighting so hard, so relentlessly, with every ounce of his soul to exhaust every single last thing, I say to my kids all the time, when you throw everything on the kitchen table and you gave everything your complete all, and there's everything, every option you've ever could do is exhausted, the outcome is what it is. And just knowing that he tried this hard with everything in his soul to do all he could for Lindsay, for the client, and very obviously for something he believes so deeply in. It really is awe-inspiring. What his action is just awe-inspiring. So it's been a snip-snap back and forth, up and down, especially now, you know, we've had all the leakage about what it looks like, what the verdict was, you know. It's been this case has been long. It's been exhausting, I think, psychologically and emotionally for a lot of people. But and it ain't disappointing in the last couple hours. There's no doubt.
It really has. Yeah, I mean, it's just been a roller coaster. To better understand what exactly is going on here, this is how I'm understanding it. The Clancy jury just told Judge Sullivan for the third time they cannot and will not reach a unanimous verdict. And they used the term "with a heavy heart." I thought that was interesting. After 7 days and more than 36 hours, and Sullivan said he had no choice but to declare a hung jury mistrial, defense attorney Kevin Reddington stopped him. Reddington has been arguing since yesterday that this is not a true deadlock, that 11 jurors are ready to acquit on lack of criminal responsibility in one holdout, acknowledging doubt, but refuses to apply it to the verdict, which Reddington says is a refusal to follow the judge's reasonable doubt instruction. Sullivan refused to remove that juror, so Reddington has asked for a brief stay, meaning basically press pause for a second. The judge was about to bring the jury back in to declare the mistrial. Reddington said, wait 1 second for that stay to file an emergency Chapter 211 Section 3 petition, which, of course, we all know what that is, with a single justice of the Massachusetts Supreme Court. What it is, it's a rarely used mid-trial appeal that lets the high court step in if they believe a defendant's constitutional rights are being violated, and a later appeal would be worthless. So Sullivan gave him 1 hour. That's where we got to the physical challenge, and he's out there on the court steps going through the hamster wheel and jumping through the hoops of fire. The mistrial is on pause. If the SJC does nothing, the trial ends with no verdict, and the prosecutors decide whether to retry her. Then if they intervene, this jury stays a little bit longer. But the clock is ticking. It's been roughly about an hour now roughly about 40 minutes now since that happened in the courtroom, and the judge gave Reddington about 60 minutes to come back with whatever he's filing. So we'll
see. Yeah,
we'll
and it was see. Also interesting, Tony, I'm actually looking up right now because I was watching it live. I wasn't ready to take notes. But he did mention, again, he's throwing everything he can at this, and I'm trying to get his exact wording here and what he might be trying to do with it also. He did bring up Lindsay being in a wheelchair and American Disabilities Act. I wonder if that's actually going to be part of his appeal to a Supreme Court justice in the state, saying that this one holdout, maybe he might try to claim, again, pure conjecture. I'm throwing this on the screen because I'm not quite sure what he's going for, about maybe that he was prejudiced because of her disability. I mean, that's where I kind of took it as a possibility of him being able to remove that juror from that possibility as well. I don't know. Who knows? But it was definitely a last minute stay to see what else you can do. And just talk about, you know, the thing that strikes behaviors like me and how I frame this entire thing from the get-go is all the relationship involved. And we saw the relationships of Lindsay's parents, coworkers, family, even ex-husband, you know, all these people vouching for her as a mother, as a wife, and all these things along the way. And then we see Reddington's behavior in the courtroom as well, his complete vestiture in her, holding her hand, comforting her as she's completely losing it. And then when the judge says, all right, I'll do this, but you got to do it fast. And he's trying not to look at his watch and insinuate that we got a long weekend because of Labor Day weekend. But he was. And Reddington, the fact that Reddington says, I can get this done in an hour, demonstrates the depth of relationships he has to be able to pick up a phone to a Supreme Court justice and get things done. So again, the things that solve the greatest challenges that we face in life is trust and healthy relationships, and he's got them.
Yeah, I mean, he does. I mean, it's really going. This is one of those cases where we've been talking with a lot of, you know, very good attorneys who know their stuff. And even then, I mean, it's amazing what levers can exist in the law, because it's like, well, what are the possibilities here? And everybody says, well, it's either going to be this or going to be that. And all of a sudden, Reddington's like, wait a second, I got this little card I can pull out. I didn't think you had that. Like, nobody knew you could even, like, this man knows the law well. This man is who you want in your corner if you're faced with something like Lindsey Clancy is facing. Let's talk about the actual logistics.
I'm sorry, I hate to interrupt you, Tony. I misspoke a little bit because when I looked it up, here's what it looks like he's going for on mentioning her disability, because he brought up the Karen Reed case and Karen Reed being able to sit retrial. He's claiming that because of Lindsey's disability, her ability to sit retrial is greatly reduced, and so that's one of the things he's throwing in there as well. That's why. Okay, so
extra weight,
yes,
for consideration with the judge. I want to talk about really kind of some of the bricks of this case, the foundation of it, of how we got here. You know, we always hear about the lone holdout. It's in movies sometimes. The 12 Angry Men, right. Juror, the one that's going to hold out to the end for justice. I mean, but let's be real. When someone digs their heels in on a case this heavy, I mean, how often is it genuine principle? I mean, to that person, they believe it is. To everybody else, it's grandstanding. I guess, you know, it's only grandstanding when you don't agree with it. But how often is it genuine versus an ego trip from someone who wanted the main character to be them in a national trial? I mean, I really wonder about that when you have a situation like this and one person is still digging in. What, you know, how do you get to the bottom of it? It is one of the flaws of our system, but it is a system that we use to try and deliver justice here in our country. But it certainly is not without its flaws or the ability for people to hijack it if they so choose.
So time is a teller of that one, being that, you know, was this person holding out for principle? Is it because, you know, beyond reasonable doubt is very personally subjective.
Yeah.
And you can give the greatest jury instructions in the world, but your interpretation from your context is very subjective. And so they're holding out, they're holding to their principles of what they think is reasonable doubt as defined by the judge. And that's how our system works. And I have respect for the person that's doing this if it's done for that reason. And what I mean by time will tell, if now after the trial, all of a sudden that one lone juror publishes a book, The One Lone Juror, well, you knew it was for celebrity notoriety. That's why I say time will tell on this one, because this is how our system works, and that's why it's got to be unanimous. It's got to be. But again, when you're dealing with 12, from your reference, 12 angry people, and on such a divisive case when it comes to the complication, again, there's very few states that have the law written this way that made it this complicated to try to understand, with the burden being on the prosecution. Any other state, well, I think there's four, it definitely wouldn't have gone to trial. And then the majority of the other ones, the burden's on the defense to prove it. And this one, the burden is on the prosecution. Again, I'm not the lawyer, I'm not the legal type. But again, this case would not be getting the attention it otherwise would have somewhere else. But again, it's how the system works.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And that's the thing we have to remember here, is it is the prosecution that is supposed to be proving this beyond a reasonable doubt. It's their burden to prove that Lindsey Clancy was in her right mind, not the opposite way around, which is a bit of a different goalpost to be going through here. And if you're sitting in that room and you've been staring at autopsy photos of three little kids for weeks, you're emotionally drained. You're trapped with people who see the world maybe completely differently. At least some of them, it seems, there's some conflict going on here. I mean, how fast does a jury room stop debating the evidence and just devolve into screaming matches, tears, and hostility when emotions are running this high? And do you ever get to a resolution without someone, I mean, essentially violating the rules? Because jury rules are confusing. The judge went on for roughly an hour the other day with some of those rules. And, I mean, if you're just listening to them as a layperson, which most of us are, they do seem confusing. I would venture to argue that they are flat out conflicting in some ways, where it talks about your convictions, but follow the letter of the law. Well, a conviction's not exactly a letter of the law. It's an opinion. It's a conviction. But you're supposed to follow that super strong while at the same time take the law into account. Do we need to do better? Again, I mean, this is, I feel like every time we get to some of these steps in our law and our cases that we follow, we operate in such almost bizarre old school pageantry. The only thing we're missing are the wigs that they still wear in Canada and other countries. You know, it's like, at what point do we go, okay, let's update. We can do better. We're not in 1622 now. It just feels like we still operate under a very different set of reasoning when it comes to this stuff.
It's such an interesting word, saying we could do better, because better becomes subjective as well. Out of all cases we've covered in the last 4 years together, I think this has been done the best. I really do.
Yeah.
And in the sense that, you know, we're not seeing misdeeds by anyone on any side, really. We're seeing the criminal justice play out. We're seeing a defense attorney working his ass off to serve his client, and not just serve his client, but uphold the Constitution with every nook and cranny he knows from his 50 years of experience of doing this, being very highly decorated. And not just that, but he believes in his client's innocence. Innocence, not being criminally responsible is a better way to put it, because he knows that she killed her kids. Now, can the criminal justice always be improved? Absolutely. That's why we're human beings, because the greatest thing that makes a society function is self-correcting documents and self-correcting procedures, because that shows that we're learning and evolving. It's when things lock down, like people that form cults based off of doctrine that they say is not correctable. Over time and thousands of years, those ones get scary, because we do learn, we do evolve, and do get better on things. It'll be really interesting legally, and that's why next week it'll be interesting to get Bob's and Eric's opinion on where they saw maybe legal things that could be improved upon. But that being said, the system worked. I mean, and it's worked in this case. I mean, I know I personally have the outcome I was hoping for and still hope for. And you don't want it to have to go to retrial for all the reasons it looks like Reddington's battling for. But at the same time, you know, it gives you faith that at least it's a system that is functioning. And the hardest part of this entire system is jury selection. It takes a lot of questioning by both prosecution and defense to go through the jury questionnaire, to go through all the possible candidates. And they have, I can't remember the exact number they have that they can actually dismiss outright if they can't conform to what the law is, or the judge can do it if they said they can't conform to the law and the jury instructions. And according to, you know, the foreman's the one, because I know that's one of the questions in the chat, you know, who said that they couldn't conform to the jury instruction or to the judge's instructions. I believe it was the foreman that said that. Yeah. When they put the note up to the judge. And that's the thing for dismissal. Yeah. But before the fact, not during the fact. So and the judge is following the law. He's actually, as much as Reddington is trying to browbeat him on certain things, the judge is actually following the law.
Everything is such a gray area. I mean, I think that's
human being subjectiveness. Yeah.
And it's so stupid, because it's like, this is supposed to be an area where it's a little more black and white, where we can get somewhere. And it's like, okay, well, they're not following the law. If that's how we're going to, it's how one person's going to interpret it. And that person is saying, no, I'm following my convictions. I'm just giving my two cents here. This is not what they're saying verbatim, right, or anything. But, you know, I would imagine that's probably what they would argue if they're not. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm following the law according to how I interpret it, is I'm guessing how that person is thinking. And look, I mean, if you listen to the jury instructions, it probably is right to a certain extent, because it gets into that gray area where there is a conflict in there about, your convictions in following them versus the law, or that they somehow magically line up. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And then it invites areas like this where someone's going to interpret it the way they're going to interpret it. And I can't get involved on either side, says the judge. And you're right. You shouldn't get involved on either side and say this is right or this is wrong. But we don't really have much of a mechanism in place other than strong suggestions, it seems, when someone does refuse to actually follow the letter of the law, or maybe we need a clearer rules or something going. I don't know. I don't know the answer to this question.
I don't either, because you know. So always one thing to remember with human beings: if we're thinking really hard about it and we're on the outside, imagine how hard inside that jury room they're thinking about it, and you imagine how hard these people want to go home, especially if it's the numbers that they're saying it is. It's 11 against 1, yeah. And you know. And from what I understand, from what I saw reported on the news, the foreman is a very well-educated individual. So you know, I can only imagine the amount of persuasion, influence, anything they're trying to do to argue the point of why this is not yeah. this is reasonable doubt, you know, because that's all they have to have, and they cannot make a budge. And so you yeah. know, I have to tell you, at this point, the judge's words probably mean not even close to what those 11 people in there are battling against them inside that jury room. Because can you imagine this person, the amount of browbeating they're getting in there day in and day out, hour after hour? Yeah. And so now here, and this is where I. If they're not doing it for a book deal, if they're not doing it for a look at me moment, I'm hoping that's not the case.
Yeah.
Right. And but if that's the case, if they're doing it because of their convictions, here's what goes through my head in moments like this where you're battling against the tide. You play the tape forward. And in that case, this individual has their own convictions and understanding of what that term means, and they're saying to themselves, I have to live, not in the moment, not because I want to go home for Labor Day weekend, or not because I disagree with 11 people. I have to live the rest of my life with this decision that is very, very important. And for the rest of my life, not this moment, this is what I decide I'm choosing to live with. Not because of a moment of notoriety, but because this is what I believe. Me personally, I don't like this. I want it done. I want it over. And I don't understand why they see that there isn't reasonable doubt. But that's me. And so if it's not for a moment of notoriety, I do have respect for the fact that they're probably playing that tape forward, as disappointing as it is in the moment.
Yeah, it's such a fallible system.
It is.
I mean, it is. And I mean, it makes you wonder a little bit, like, should we... I mean, I'm not saying this like lightly, and I'm not even suggesting we should do it, but I do wonder if at some point in time it will be erased either with here AI. Or in other places with AI. Yeah. I wonder. Where something could be more looked at from a truly balanced, follow the rules, here's how the law is interpreted. But again, even AI, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you can do it. I experiment with it all the time. You can create tell the exact same thing on two different threads, and you may get two totally different outputs. It can be just as fallible as human beings.
But
in terms of weighing things, it certainly could be a lot more of a balanced thing to look at cases than the prism of whoever had several weeks to give up to sit here.
I actually thought long and hard about that one as well, Tony, because AI does, at least as of today, seems to be objective with its analysis of things. I use it all the time when we're doing our case prep during our show. I use it all the time for doing research. And I wouldn't see, especially in the near future, us relinquishing, you know, our assessment of another human being to a machine.
No, I mean, Kevin Reddington is doing the obstacle course right now to run and get that thing over there. So,
right.
I mean, the idea of AI coming in, I think, will be long gone.
But here's what I could say it could actually help, because this is what I've done throughout it. Because for me, maintaining objectivity, maintaining critical thinking. So like the other day when we were talking to Coffin Deffer, and I completely, and we both are, and so is Todd and Lisa, 180% completely opposite of the interpretation. So what I do is I set up a criteria. I have a protocol that I actually have in place to ensure my objectivity, to ensure my critical thinking, and to ensure I don't have confirmation bias to the best we can as human beings. And so when if the juries were have, and it's an interesting thought experiment, if juries would have the ability to take in all that data they've been presented in that jury room and then have it objectively analyzed and assessed and then presented to them in any way they want it for that human connection, that human interpretation, that to me would be an, that's what I do all the time.
Basically, could they use it as a tool? Could they use it as a calculator on a math test?
That's where I use it.
Where essentially it's the word calculator, as I've been saying for so long, where, okay, I'm going to harness the power of this to help me better contextualize what just happened in front of me. But then you're going to get into the issue of, well, how it was contextualized. It was swayed more than, I mean, I know there's a whole argument we could go down that road with. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue here to wait for a Lindsey Clancy verdict in a trial that very much looks like it's going to and in a hung jury unless something amazing happens in the next few moments. Your thoughts on all of this on Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description. Outside the courtroom, there has been an ugly spectacle playing out around Patrick Clancy and the Lindsey Clancy case. The man moved to New York, remarried, and has tried to put one foot in front of the other. Instead of letting him heal, the internet has turned into a mob, snapping photos of him on the street, tracking his personal life, and furious that he isn't publicly mourning the right way. Let's talk about this weird, aggressive urge people have to police the surviving father's grief. To do that, Robin Dreek is with me, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis. Oh, I'm getting word. We might actually have another... We have more of Kevin on the steps of the courthouse.
And why did it go his way?
Oh my gosh. Here he is again. He's looks like he's racing. He's trying to win.
There we go. All that in 75.
Look at that. Ring of fire. You did it.
Tony, I'd love to say that you have too much time on your hands, but I know how much content you put out, so you don't.
Can I please host that game show? Please? Can
Kevin
I host
Huntington,
that?
Yes. He took the physical challenge. Let's watch that again. Here we go. Here we go. Mark Summers is a magically also de-aged. Mark is back to being about 28.
You know what you should have done is have him getting off his Harley to do it.
Yeah. Kevin. He's making it through.
Freaking AI is scary, isn't it?
Here we go.
I do like to make a fire.
I'd love to see Kevin Reddington do the moonwalk. Just so if you ever want to work on something, have him do like a Michael Jackson dance or something.
As he hops off his Harley, because I still think that Harley is part of who he is.
Oh my goodness. Funny, actually, yeah.
So yeah, the Patrick question.
Yeah. So, I mean, people have literally taken creep shots of this guy getting coffee in Manhattan and posted them online with captions like, look at him. He doesn't even care about his babies at the drive. I mean, shit like that. I mean, when did true crime fandom cross the line into thinking we have the right to stalk a surviving parent and grade his pain? It's,
you know, so we've covered this a lot with Siobhan, and there's a lot of things that play into this. His courtroom demeanor, the fact that he got married 3 years, and so we've been talking about, well, how long is too long to grieve? We have all these little data points, but I've been really thinking hard about this, and that's because, as you all know, you know, Tony, Todd, and Lisa, you know, I had a clip that came out on Lisa Belew's Women of Influence podcast that was talking about how Patrick stood with Lindsey, the family stood with Lindsey, coworkers stood with Lindsey, and I got absolutely eviscerated for saying the words Patrick stood with Lindsey. And I thought about this and trying to understand why, because, and when I said stood with Lindsey or stands with Lindsey, I meant that he supported her and the psychotic break because he was part of her life and he knows that wasn't her. That's the intent of my message. But the word stood with Lindsay. That's what got played on. That's what people are hammering. And so when I thought about that, I said, why were those words so triggering? And I when you take that optic back, here's what I really, really think this is about. And all these other data points too, but the one of the major data points that when is human beings, we pick up on creepy. And when people make us feel creepy, we have a visceral reaction to it. We don't know why, but it just makes us feel creepy. And so years ago, I looked at what makes us feel creepy. It's incongruence between what we see and what we expect from a baseline. And so I've been focusing on Patrick's behavior in there and how it was him grieving. Siobhan said the same thing. He's got walls up. Can you imagine the survivor guilt he has and all these other things that played into how he's trying to cope and move on with his life? But what I really think was when people were hammering me for saying he stood with Lindsay, it doesn't look like he stands with Lindsay. And what I mean is what I think people are picking up on, and I get it now, I don't think it makes any sense, but here's what it is. Everyone else that I've mentioned that we're saying is on Lindsay's side, where are all of them? They are all in the courtroom. They are all part of her life. They haven't moved on. The person that was closest for his own mental health, for whatever the reasons are, he's not there. So he's the incongruence. And what we've said it before, what does everyone want? Everyone wants a monster. They can't, you know, for the ones that are pro Lindsay, that can't believe she's the monster because there was a monster inside her, which is that psychotic break, or it was the postpartum, severe postpartum depression with SIIdization, and then the filicide, altruistic filicide, you know, whatever flavor you want, she wasn't in her right mind and cognitive of it. And the reason why, again, the Patrick pylon, I think, is because he is incongruent with what everyone else in his in her life is demonstrating in the courtroom and everywhere else, even though he's completely innocent of absolutely any of the horrendous things people are saying about, from my perspective, from testimony, from everything we're seeing, actual data and not the TikTok verse. That's why I think
it's just, I mean, it seems to be kind of this unspoken expectation that if you survive something horrific, you have to remain permanently broken to be deemed worthy of sympathy. I mean,
because the rest of the family looks it.
I mean, they don't. I mean, not all of them do. I mean, if Patrick were drinking himself to death in the basement, people would feel bad for him.
Yep.
The minute he tries to rebuild a life, it's treated like a betrayal. I mean, why are people so deeply offended by survival? And then they try to go to, he's profiting. Like, his friend set up a GoFundMe to help with the funeral costs and the medical costs. And here's how stupid some of the comments I've seen on that are.
I know.
What medical costs? Bless your heart. You think Patrick wasn't sitting there at the end of the day after his wife did all this and there was no medical cost for all of that? And then the surviving child in the hospital for days and then the kids getting back? Oh, trust me. There was hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical costs guaranteed for all of that. And then just trying to figure out life.
It's easy to analyze. So if you could look at, because I know people are piling on that GoFundMe, which I think is really not right in a lot of reasons. But let's look at other cases. We've had them. I'm trying to remember. We've had a few of them where their GoFundMes were set up. And so look at other cases, look at other examples of people that set up GoFundMes that are very clearly for their own profit, their own notoriety.
Yeah,
and
there
money.
Are shitty ones.
And here's what the congruence on those all are. What are those people actually doing every day in their lives? Nothing. They're waiting to live off the GoFundMe. What's him and his new wife doing? Working their asses off in New York City. He's still got a full-time job. His new wife's got a full-time job. They're still paying bills. So,
and he went for a walk this morning, and he's not in the courtroom. Oh, my God.
I just point out data points of, let's look at other cases where GoFundMes were used for malicious intent, for profit, for gain. And to think that someone strategized out, again, I know everyone that's on the hate Patrick bandwagon will always find the data points to support their point of view, because of the confirmation bias and our amazing ability to find patterns where they don't exist, you know, that that he decided that, all right, I'm going to off my three kids, I'm going to set up a GoFundMe and make a lot of money and frame my wife. That's what some of these people are actually believing, right after they got off the, you know, proven that the earth is flat and we didn't land on the moon. But it's just the most ludicrous thing. Because again, because think about this, what have we typically seen in cases where someone's trying to profit off of death? Life insurance policies.
Yeah.
Don't set up GoFundMes. So GoFundMes are the things that either people set up for you after the fact because you're in distress, or you're in financial straits because you can't pay bills. Because I'll tell you, and it's not because, so think about this too, because people say, well, you know, Reddington should be doing his pro bonos. I've heard that argument as well. Well, so put Reddington's salary aside. Do you know how much money it costs to bring, to fly experts in, to pay for their expert opinions, all these things it takes for 3.5 years or 3 years plus, yeah, to bring in all these people for that amount of time? So regardless of Reddington's personal cost, the cost of bringing in, how many witnesses again were there for defense?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I mean, for defense, not a, this, it was a much smaller number than the prosecution.
Right. Because everyone you, yeah, bring in, yeah, you have to pay for.
Yeah.
And these experts are not cheap to pay for. The prosecution side, the state pays for it.
Yeah.
And so defense, the family pays for it. Plus, like you said, the medical bills of trying to treat her, the funeral costs, the whole, and they took a loss on the house because they sold the house in order to try to pay the bills, you know, or to whatever reason they are. I don't want to have conjecture on it, but they took a loss on the house from what I understand when they sold the house. There's all these things. So all I'm saying is everyone take a deep breath and have a little grace and get a little more curious. If something stands out to you, says, dive deeper. Don't come to a conclusion and ask yourself, what does that potentially mean? And you, and hold multiple theories in your head and try to prove or disprove everything at the same time.
No. Yeah. There's so many things that need to be looked at in a clearer light in this case. And I don't know. I walk away from it going, yeah, you know, some people, you know, earlier in the year, we'd read that the Mel, or not, who's the Let Them book, the
Mel Robbins.
Mel, yeah, Robbins book. I think I need to read it again. it's a regular philosophy, a common philosophy, but sometimes, you know, you get very caught up into how are you not seeing this way, or how are you not seeing it my way, or why can't I see your way? It's like sometimes you just got to go and do the, let's see, however you want.
Yes. Yeah. So
there's nothing I'm going to do to change this.
And everything, I mean, this has been one of the easier cases we've covered from the coverage standpoint, because we covered it while it was in trial. So we're actually able to use just the facts and data as presented in the trial itself. And so it's been very easy to hear these wild ass claims on TikTok, people pretending to have authority or stating they have authority. And you know, I saw this here. And you know, I'm not saying this, but this is interesting because that draws people in on pure conjecture, pure humanistic way to find patterns where they don't exist, to prove a point because you don't like something in your life, because you don't like the person in your life. No, it's very easy. Just go to the testimony, because both the prosecution, who's trying to put her in jail for the rest of her life and say that she's criminal culpable, as well as the defense, who's saying that she's not criminally culpable, if it was able to be flushed out as a fact by either side, it would be in there, because they're throwing everything they possibly can at the wall to try to make it stick. So if you came up with something that wasn't in a trial, the likelihood of you coming up with an original idea is zero to nothing. I said it the other day, you know, the courage to be disliked. Hey, accept the fact you're average. You're not special. You're not coming up with any great grand schemes or ideas. I mean, on our show here, every single day, it's just us coming up with great schemes or ideas of what we think is really going on. No, it's debunking a lot of nutters that are coming up with crazy schemes and ideas that have nothing to do with facts, data, and details. Especially, this case is so easy to follow. Watch the testimony. Watch all of it. All of it is there to watch. Yeah. So just do it. It's just right there.
Yeah, and it's an ability to accept information that may make you feel uncomfortable or may challenge, you know, one's understanding or belief systems of things being black and white. And this is a case that certainly does that.
And then there's one more point here, Tony, too. And this is how you do it with an open mind. And even, you know, Coffendeffer, who, you know, 180 degrees out, said it on air, said to her, even though we're still friends, you know, completely disagree on probably every single point about this case with her. You know, when Halbrain, I can't even say his name right, the last rebuttal special expert for the prosecution got up there and gave his two potential theories. As a guy that's on the side of, I think defense is right on this one. I think that she's not criminally culpable according to Massachusetts state law, according to what we've seen at massive deviation split. And this is a prosecution expert getting up there. It's like, he made sense. I can actually entertain that thought because I'm critically thinking through the things he saw, because what exactly he said during his testimony was, because of her life arc and her behaviors and all the testimony from all these people in his life, he literally said, don't quote me, it was something to the effect of, this completely does not make sense that she would do this. So with that information, there has to be another explanation. He gave the psychotic break explanation and the other explanation. That's how we maintain critical thinking, is we entertain the thought of the other opinion and actually flush it out.
And that's something we need to do more of. And I like that we do that here, but it would be good to see it in other places as well. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to wait for the judge to bring the jury back in and for Reddington to be back from the obstacle course have filed what he needs to file, and we'll see what exactly where this goes from here. Let's go here. The district attorney, did they paint themselves into a corner right from the start by going for the first degree murder? I mean, should this have been something lesser to begin with, or would that, you know? Sometimes you go in with a harder charge, assuming that jury's going to end up with a lower one. So you do, you know, you go in harder. You got three children are dead. I mean, is it politically possible for an elected prosecutor to offer a plea deal without facing some sort of massive backlash, even if proving cold-blooded premeditation was always a huge gamble? Notice the word political gets mixed into there. So the motivations of how you're prosecuting a case don't necessarily rest on, you know, the laurels of the case or what's right or wrong if you're adding the word political into the conversation.
Yeah, political always seems to come in at some point, because every time we look at trying to understand why certain people are making certain decisions when it comes to prosecuting what cases they're going to prosecute, there's usually some sort of election coming up. I mean, we just dealt with that out in Vegas with what's-his-face's case, right?
Yeah.
But in this case, and here's why I don't, again, my conjecture on this one, I don't think politics played a huge part of this. You know, so it goes to the original question, you know, why go for first-degree murder when you have a lot of other options on this? And here's what I think, and this is based off of what we're seeing. And if you look and if you go online and you pull up the stats on how people are standing on this case, if you're in the camp, like a lot of people are, 100% guilty, premeditated, no such thing as her breaking a psychotic, you know, having a psychotic break, because, you know, you look at it's not exactly Andrea Yates like, and so she's wrong, she's guilty, and she should be behind bars. I believe this is exactly, the people that think that by and large are law enforcement and prosecutors. That is, and there's, I know there's a lot of other people in there, but people that lean hard towards law enforcement, justice, and prosecution side oriented people, they're typically on that side. And so if you live inside an echo chamber of that, like the prosecution does here, they're talking to law enforcement, they're talking to other people, they're looking past cases that happen because this case is so rare. They're saying to themselves, of course we're going to go for first-degree murder. Why wouldn't we? She's guilty. When you look at their courtroom demeanor, what was really telling to me for the two prosecutors in the room was when the entire courtroom is falling apart in emotion, because we had Bob Mata on the inside. It wasn't just Lindsay Clancy collapsing on herself, bawling, shaking, but everyone else dealing with that same high emotions, looking at the pictures of the murdered children and everything. They listened to the 911 call. The only two people not to be losing their shit were the two prosecutors. And so how can that happen? How can they be like that? Well, they think she's performative. When you think someone's performing and they don't really feel that emotion and you just see them as a vile human being, their emotions don't impact you whatsoever, typically. And so, again, pure conjecture. I don't know them. I don't live inside their heads. But my conjecture on this is the reason they went for first-degree murder is they completely 100% believe in an entire echo chamber that this is exactly the only thing that fits in their mind, and anything less would be wrong.
Well, I mean, I feel like that's I think how he had such vitriol through this whole case from the beginning is because there really wasn't, I don't know, a lot of minds being changed or ability to hear the evidence in this case and have an opinion swayed. I don't think a lot of people went into this middle of the road. I could be wrong. I'm sure there's some, but I don't know that a lot of people were middle of the road on this to begin with and being willing to be swayed. I feel like a lot of people went in with their direction they were going, and then the echo chamber started on any side, and it just fortified that even harder, and each side gets louder at each other. At the end of the day, also both sides not hearing each other, because I think it's funny in some ways, when you get to talking with people on this, if you have a different opinion, everybody agrees. Yes, it's horrible. The children are dead.
100%.
But I think sometimes you almost get so upset at a person who's a different opinion about the logistics of this case, which is really what we're talking about. And if it's different, we start assigning their own intent to this, or their own beliefs of they don't care about the children. I think everybody cares about the damn kids.
And everyone wants her behind bars. It's in general population or getting psychiatric treatment. I mean, seriously, no one wants her out in public.
Nobody wants her anything, but at the end of the day, people don't want this to happen again. People don't want this to keep happening again. But and that's what gets me on it is there really is only one path for that. And that's understanding this and looking at the ways that she was failed and hopefully putting enough speed bumps in place to prevent the next one. There will always be failures. There will always be people that will fall through the system. That will happen. But if we can recognize that, hey, if some of these things have been done better, we probably wouldn't be here. We will catch several others of them in the process. But if we just go and say, well, every time they come by, just burn them at the stake, that's not helping anything. That's not justice. That's just, you know, I don't know. That's ignorance, in my opinion.
And there's so many parts of that. Just the people just don't understand that. I think at the end of the day, we have so much more in common on this case than people realize. So even the hardliners that said, you know, lock her up and throw away the key. Okay. But what would it cost you to just say, well, get her treatment along the way too? So we can learn, you know, part of that treatment is to have the researchers go in there and also talk to her so we can actually have all the red flags that are going off along the system, all the things that failed her in the system, all the medications that weren't working for her, and whether you believe she's taking them or not, I don't even care. Whatever was going on didn't work. Why not incarcerate her like you want to incarcerate her, and then just instead of throwing away the key and being ignorant, why don't we learn from it and move forward so it doesn't happen again? So the whole point of the criminal justice system is to justice. And what's part of justice? Not allowing that to happen again. I actually researched justice too on this one because everyone says, I want justice for the children. Well, what is justice for the children? What's justice to the family? The family wants her incarcerated, getting medical treatment. So everyone that is standing for lock her up in general population, throw away the key the rest of your life. So you're standing against the family's wishes, which are the only survivors and the remaining victims. So you're standing opposed to the victims in this. That's interesting. And it costs you as a human being nothing to allow her to get treatment and be researched so it doesn't happen again. That, to me, is justice, is learning to not let this happen again. I don't understand what the argument is about learning.
Because it means accepting that maybe your deeply held belief systems or opinions in the past might be wrong.
But I'm not even
that's
saying
why.
That's so funny.
People don't like that.
But I'm not even saying you're wrong. Okay, you're right. You want her locked away. I mean, as you know, because, you know, again, I hate bringing up Jen so much, but, you know, a lot of times on a lot of cases, we wind up in exactly the same outcome of what we think should happen on a case. It's the path we got there, which is different. But again, if at the end of the day, the goal and objectives is attained, good. I mean, I do this all the time. So what my team did all the time was we operated on what I call the code of trust. And the first step in the code of trust is what's your goal, objective, and priority? And then the next step under that is who do we need on our side to achieve that? And then I have all these steps to bring on these people. But that number one thing is what's your goal and objective and priority? Because as we diverge on the world of the what's and how's and how we're going to make that happen and the path forward, that's where we get like this. And that's exactly where we are today. I mean, seriously, everyone do your own thought experiment right now. Everyone on both sides of this case, at the end of the day, we're so closer aligned than the what's and how's. Everyone's arguing was like, she should be criminally responsible. She shouldn't be criminally responsible. She didn't take her medications. She did take her medications. She was taking them for this. I mean, all these things in here, except for the Patrick Nutter stuff, you know, all these things are arguing the what's and how's. But at the end of the day, I don't know anyone that says we want her released and allow it to happen again to other babies. No one wants her to go out again and have more babies and kill them. And the probability of that went through the probability of that. You know, the earlier she'd be released, she'd probably going through menopause. The fact that she might even be able to have kids because of her injuries is also pretty high. So again, just go to the end of the day. Everyone is pretty much looking for really, really closely aligned the same thing. Why is everyone arguing so much? That's what really blows my mind.
This just spiders off in so many different directions. If you strip away the lawyers and the courtroom theatrics, just for a second, Lindsay Clancy is paralyzed from the waist down in a wheelchair, living every day with the realization of what she did. I mean, what does society actually gain by putting her in a state penitentiary versus a locked psychiatric facility? I mean, is it about public safety? Is it just pure payback? It's the insatiable need for revenge, and we got you. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think people really need to take a step back and look at where the rage comes from in this case. If you're really feeling it hard, I think you got to ask why. And where
she's offering herself up as a science experiment. Literally, yeah. She says, I want to be your science experiment. Figure this out. She wants to be an advocate for people not having, and she doesn't want to be out forming her own not-for-profit, you know, living in society. Because again, remember, she's still on S-Watch 24/7, one-on-one, always being observed, because if given the chance, she'll off herself. She will self-delete in a heartbeat. And so if you're going to make her stick around, she's saying, I might as well, again, I'm not trying to put words in her mouth, but from what we've seen, from what we've heard, the leakage is that she wants to make a difference. So not allow this happen again if she's going to remain on this planet.
Let's look at this here in the it's highly unlikely that anything other than a mistrial is going to be the outcome here at this point.
Right.
Let's talk about the unlikeliness that that we're going to see her at another trial. I mean, at this point, I don't know. I have my doubts. They're going to have to keep that S watch pretty tight.
I think that's why Reddington invoked this. Matter of fact, when you look at the language of what he invoked, and he invoked the Karen Reed trial, saying that she was able to physically make the retrial, and why he asked for a stay. Again, not putting words in his mouth because it came in the last minute before going on the air. But when I look at this and pulled it up, it looks like he's afraid that she's not going to make it to retrial because of all the issues, because of her wanting to off herself.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a very legitimate concern because I don't even know how to restate it.
It is a legitimate concern. I brought it up the other day with Siobhan. I don't know that it shouldn't not be an option for human beings that find themselves in an absolute horrendous position in life. I would certainly think this would qualify if you come out of a psychosis like this, realize the horrendous things that you did and the way the world has positioned itself against you. I don't know. I would think that would qualify to be a humane way of exiting should you choose to go.
My guess is that because she's on 24/7 S watch for the last 3+ years.
Yeah, so we can do a circus, basically.
Yeah, I would say the only other reason that she is still here is because Reddington and her family are begging her to stay.
Yeah,
that's literally it. I mean, what other reason is there? She doesn't want to be here.
I don't know. I really think it's going to be an interesting task.
Take the eyes off her and give her the opportunity. I don't think she'll be here.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think that's the reality of a lot of this. A
lot of angry people online.
I know. I'm trying to like look at some of them and read some of them as we wait to see if they're going to get back here in the courtroom. We're more than an hour now into this.
Yeah, E. Mullins, and that's what it is. People mistake that word vengeance and justice. Vengeance is a very very unhealthy thing for people to go after. And literally, what are you avenging? I mean, just ask yourself these questions. Why are you as an individual, if you're one of these people worked up, I mean, even after myself, you know, asking myself these things, you know, as I'm watching this play out and looking at the hung jury, wanting this to be finalized on what I think is a fair and just prosecution and defense of this thing. And way I keep myself from getting wrapped up in that is saying, well, the system is working the way the system's designed. Can it be better? Yes. Can it be, you know, fixed? Can it be? Yes. But at the same time, it is working like it is. And at the end of the day, it's not my justice. It's not my revenge. I mean, I'm not looking for any of that. I'm looking for people being served, public safety being served, and you're not bringing the kids back. And when you can't do anything else, I pay attention to families. You know, when you look at the Gonsalveses dealing with what they think is justice for their lost daughter and the other three that lost their hands, the Koberger and that monster, you know, you listen and pay attention to them. And, you know, when you look at the victim impact statements they gave, those are profound. And the only thing I keep playing forward on this one is what will the, you know, say that she comes back and is convicted, whether this time or retrial is the next one. And the family gets up there to give victim impact statements. They're going to be saying, please put her in a psych ward. I mean, that's all they want. That's all anyone wants. I just don't understand why people aren't listening.
I don't know. I don't know exactly why, you know, I don't know. I've been surprised by this entire case, quite honestly.
It's a shocking one.
The amount of vitriol, the amount of just directions and roads that everyone has been going down on this case, where we go all the way to the Patrick Rhodes to everything. It's really just been kind of shocking, all the directions that it has taken us down. We're now at about 12 o'clock Central Time. We're about an hour and a half now since the judge gave Reddington about an hour to go and get that.
Okay, as you're doing that, so the Jerry, put her in a posh facility. All right, Jerry, so let's explore that. You say posh facility, so you think it's a posh facility. Did you do the research on where she actually is right now and where she'd be housed? No, you didn't, because if you look it up, it's not a posh facility. So it's when people make a statement that is completely pulled out of your ass, do some research before you put it out there, because that is not the way it works. And if you think it's so, here's what you do before you open the mouth, open the brain and say to yourself, all right, I think she's going to be staying in a posh facility. Let me take a look at what that is. Let me actually do like 5 seconds. Here, what you do, just put in the Google machine where she housed right now. And you're going to hear, it's like Coffendeffer said this the other day. Oh, the system of care that she'd get if she's put in a Gen Pop, that she'd get the psychiatric care that they have, because Massachusetts is really good. So, you know, I said, well, Jen, you made a fair point before I opened my mouth. Let me research this for the second time, because I already did it. And she is full of shit, because... They are, that facility that they have is understaffed, undermanned, and is underfunded. So she, so your posh facility, what do you think it is? That is, it, seriously, when you say posh facility, define exactly what that means. You think she's there having cookies and milk and tea all day long with all
yoga,
these
goat yoga,
really sane people that I, yeah. You are, just, the reality check is so far askew. And I'm not piling on you. It's typically what people do on this is they come up with a wild ass conjecture called a WAG, wild ass guess, and they throw it out to the ethernet, and then people grab onto that and say, yeah, that's why we don't want her to be found not criminally responsible, because she's going to be in a posh facility. No, really, you're full of shit.
Well, there's so much of it. I heard this, and it's like the first when I hear that, I'm like, oh God. Where did you hear it from? I don't know. Like, where is this from? Where are you getting? And I don't know. I've been kind of amazed by talking with various folks about this case. A lot of people seemingly very invested, but having very little in terms of facts in their toolbox when talking about it. I mean, it's a great case to talk about in terms of trying to understand and for a thought exercise. But you can only, you only play the game if you got the parts. You know, you don't go to bring out the Monopoly board and go, well, we got no pieces and no money. You know, I mean, well, you can't really play the game then. That's not going to work out.
And now comparing it to Gypsy Rose, yeah, that's a real close comparison. That's really good. Yeah. That's
yeah, exactly, and the comparisons too have been really kind of wild.
That's a good one. Yeah.
That have shown up. The only
I love you too, Miss Smaldo.
The only comparison that, I mean, it's the comparison I made early on, I'm gonna share this in case folks have not seen it. Here, I think this is a fairly accurate comparison to what we've seen.
Massachusetts, where history still comes alive. Looking for a place where the authorities don't let science get in the way of a good story? You'll feel right at home. Since 1692, Massachusetts has been the nation's leader in skipping the facts and going straight to the verdict. 13 medications in 4 months? A psychiatric hospital stay? A journal full of cries for help? Doesn't matter. If we can't understand it, you must have planned it. It's not a bug. It's a tradition.
My great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather helped rid Salem of its witches. Every single day, I carry on that fight. Back then, we called them witches. Now we just call them Lindsay Clancy. Either way, we get the job done.
And while you're here, meet the locals. Our online community is home to some of the most dedicated investigators in the country. They don't need medical records. They don't need a degree. They watched a 45-second video, and they just know. The husband? Suspicious. Was he at CVS? Sure. Did he call 911 screaming? Technically. But does that feel right? Here in Massachusetts, we don't let details get in the way of a perfectly good theory. You'll find people who've already solved a case the actual jury hasn't finished hearing yet. That's not arrogance. That's efficiency. And really, why would you waste time understanding postpartum psychosis when you could just decide she's evil and get on with your day? Massachusetts, where we've been wrong about women for over 300 years and never been more confident. Visit soon. Stay as long as you like. Just don't get sick. Around here, a breakdown and a broomstick are still the same thing.
It's good to put out tourism pieces right before the Labor Day holiday weekend.
You know, I was thinking about, as you're playing that again, so here's something that Jen brought up the other day. I thought, I gave a lot of thought to. A lot of other states that don't have, there's like four, I think, that don't actually have the defense that you can use for criminally insane or not guilty by reason of insanity / criminally culpable. What they do is they got rid of that defense, and what they use is they use all these things and these facts and data as presented during this case as mitigation for where you're going to serve your term. I'd be fine with that too. Is again, I'm focused on the outcome. I don't care how you get there. I mean, well, I do, because I think part of this is also the mental health system that failed her, that got us to this point, obviously, you know, so, but that part needs to be fixed. And I think that's what this is good education for. But however she gets into that facility so she can be treated, so we can learn from this, so we cannot let this happen again, that's fine with me too. Because again, if this happened in one of those other states, we wouldn't be having this conversation, which I know everyone says this is not, you know, the mental health system is not on trial. But it's certainly the cause of it.
I just want to let you guys know that they're giving Reddington a little bit more time, and I think they're going to take the lunch break and all that and then come back. So just so you're aware.
Okay, so he's got some more time, so this is probably not going to be wrapping up anytime immediately soon. Okay, all right. So, I mean, I wonder. I mean, look, at the end of the day, this woman's future on the line. I thought it was kind of interesting earlier where it was said, you want them to stay into the weekend or come back? It's like, well, we are talking about the future existence of a human being.
That's what I was thinking, Tony, because I think the judge said, you want them to come back tomorrow?
And he stopped himself.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. And I think Reddington kind of was about ready to go after him on that.
And but, I'm trying to figure out why Jerry wants her to live in my guest room, all because I'm standing on the fact that she needs help behind bars, and all of a sudden she's putting it in, so you should stay in my guest room. What? It's the comment, I just... Oh. Why?
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where this goes. Who knows? But I mean, if there's grounds to figure this out and wrap this up, yes, as inconvenient as it might be to run this into the weekend, to run this into Tuesday, it would probably be more beneficial than another 2-3 year ramp up to another trial, and all of the time and all of the effort and all of the money and all the emotional, all of that energy is being spent. If it's going to intrude a little bit into the weekend, okay.
Maybe here's what I'm curious. I wish we had Bob on to ask, and I don't know this off the top of my head. I'm wondering that during this time that Reddington got by asking for this stay, Can that one jury flip his mind during that time period and they come back unanimous from it? I don't know. I'd just be curious whether that's a done deal that they came back, that they're deadlocked, or whether this extra time might give them time to, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know the answer. I don't know that they're technically deliberating at this moment, but they're somewhere, you know, they're somewhere.
Been released.
Are they using that time to deliberate? I don't know the answer to that question. Yeah. We will definitely be getting answers later in the day. If there is a verdict, we'll bring it to you here. If not, well, you know, then we obviously continue to follow this to wherever it may lead. But for right now, I think we're going to wrap up the coverage. Some fascinating conversations throughout the day going to be dropping with Eric Faddis and others. So be sure to check that out. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, as always, thank you for being here and giving us your insight, your masterclass. It's available. Tell us about that.
Yeah. If you want more behavioral assessment stuff and learn how to become the person that people trust, check out Masterclass. Go to masterclass.com/Robin Drake. And thanks very much.
All right. Check it out. We'll keep watching. Until next time, for Robin and Todd, I'm Tony. We'll talk again real soon.
Peace.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for 10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for 10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.